Hello, everyone, and welcome to Phaeology, the study of Fire Emblem Heroes. My name is Phil, and I will be your Phaeologist today. And due to work and other things going on, Greps will not make an appearance with me today. I do have some time off myself from work and school, so I will take this opportunity to come at you guys with the Adrift banner analysis. And hopefully, if Greps does have some time, he could add his thoughts to the end of the episode. And that would be much appreciated. But if not, that's okay. And I hope that I reflect his thoughts in this analysis. So before we get into the actual banner, just some updates with the show and what we're working on. In the meantime, there has been a lot of news recently. So, of course, we want to do our best to cover that. And we have done our thoughts and impressions on version 2.11. with the Aether Raid and Heroic Grails as well. I do want to go into more depth with those. More specifically, maybe going into more strategy for keep building and planning and attack as well with Greps. Hopefully, so later on this week, we should be able to record that. And that'll be fun. Lots to talk about with that new mode. And in addition to that, with the Heroic Grails, I think it is appropriate to kind of do a tier list on which units you should upgrade or potentially plus 10 in the coming months. Similar to how I feel there should be a tier list when it comes to using Divine Dew. It's so with every month, we've always placed these units in my own personal tier list just to help you guys out in addition to myself on how to use that Divine Dew, since it is somewhat of a precious resource. And I feel like it's not as precious as it once was, but still I think it's helpful to have that diagram just to have someone else give you an opinion in addition to all the resources that you have online to help you make those decisions if you are coming at it completely objective and want to just make the best decision with your resources. And so I feel like that is warranted with our new grails, with the Heroic Grails. And so I think, first of all, since these resources are only available through Aether Raids, they are very precious. And so I do advise you to hold off, unless, of course, you have no regrets putting your resources into one character or another. I wouldn't be surprised if you, and I think it's a good idea to finish off Marth if you're looking for a plus 10 unit to use in arena or otherwise, just for the strength of and the added stats of that. It is the cheapest way if you've been playing since the beginning and have 8 copies of Marth already, or I should say 9, and have her at plus 8. And so that's not a bad way to go. And I think that is a wise decision if you're just looking for a plus 10 unit objectively, but there are so many other units that are really good. And of course we can't forget fodder. And so I think it's prudent to take a look at that as well and hopefully tier out some of these characters to help you with that decision. So I will work on that. And other than that, I've been working on a character clash episode. It's more of a battle royale among staff users. And so I hope that'll be fun. And just to tease you about that, that will be upcoming soon. I am working on a medic emblem episode as well. Hopefully it's something different enough that it might pique your interest. And I've had a lot of fun actually working on that episode. So I hope that you enjoy it too. And of course, a weapon refinery analysis of Florinas, Shauna, and Bartre and Saber will be upcoming as well, and hopefully soon. And I think that's it. And so there's a lot on our plate right now to get out to you guys. And fortunately, I do have some time to work on that this week. And so stay tuned. And that is what's coming up. But let's get into the topic at hand, which is the Adrift banner. Okay, so first of all, let's talk about female Khorne. Of course, we'll go in order of their appearance with the trailer and go from there. So female Khorne, her stats at neutral IVs at level 40 are 41 HP, 31 attack, 37 37 speed, 32 defense, and 27 resistance, with a super bane in resistance and a super boon in speed. And that brings her BST to 168, and with that super boon, it would bring her to 169, so not quite enough to reach the 170 bin. And the best IVs, according to GamePress, and in my opinion as well, are attack. If she does add three more attack, she comes up to 34, and that's not bad at all. In addition to with her really high speed, she would be able to double and dish out a lot of attack there. Or if you go with speed, that brings her up to 40 and increases her likelihood to get doubles, especially against the slower units that are a little bit more prominent in the game. But it also helps her to avoid doubles as well, and we'll get into that with her build. And an HP Bane would be most optimal, of course, if you're looking for IVs. So let's get into it. She's an infantry green dragon unit. So she joins the ranks of Fae, and that's pretty much it, and female Kana as well. So let's take a look at her weapon, and this is a weapon shared with her counterpart Male Corrin as well, but Dragon Rage. It accelerates. It's a 16 might dragon personal weapon, only usable by female and male Corrin, and it accelerates the special trigger cooldown count minus one, and if the number of allies within two spaces excluding unit is greater than the number of foes within two spaces excluding target, it grants attack and speed plus 5 during combat. And if the foe's range, and it has the adaptive damage calculator as well that dragon units have. So basically, this is a kind of a slain dragon weapon that adds the effect that is similarly found with like Legendary Lin and other units that use the more allies than not feature. And it basically gives them an attack and speed plus 5 boost, which is similar to attack, speed, and bond, I would say, to their during combat. So it's an during combat buff, so you can add outside buffs like emblem buffs or tactic buffs and things like that onto what you get from the weapon. So that is not bad at all. I think it's a good weapon in general. I think that any cooldown count is welcome. And with the build that she comes with as well, which we will talk about, having her be close to, you know, other units gives her this boost, of course. But taking a look at her base stats, I mean, with her pretty good attack and really high speed and 32 defense as well, she can basically play out as a player phase unit very comfortably. Of course, she can do an enemy phase just as well, and we'll get into simulation results with that, but I feel like her weapon kind of is more geared towards an enemy phase build, and I've always had that opinion where if you have units that have this requirement of being closer to allies physically and in practice, it's a little bit easier to pull that off if you build your units with enemy phase type builds, with quick riposte or vengeful fighter, things like that, having buffs, like kind of how an armor unit would play out. It's just easier to be by your team and have the enemy come to you and activate those buffs from your weapon or otherwise in that regard. And so she kind of has that mixed, her stats don't line up as well as they should, but come simulator time, I feel like that will be okay and it kind of plays itself out. But let's take a look at what else she has to offer. And for her assist skill, she does come with Rally Attack Speed Plus. Now, I think, so this is a new skill, and it's a new version of the plus skills, level 4 assist skills that we have been seeing released in the game soon. And this is probably the best rally skill to come out. And so any of the other combinations that we haven't seen yet, they're probably not going to be trumped by this one, which does add, and if you do use it, it adds plus 6 to attack and speed, to your target ally for one whole turn. And so not only is it good for scoring, but it's very practical in rallying as well. And so this is a would be a highly sought out skill and probably the best skill to inherit from female Corrin. She also comes with Draconic Aura, which is not a new skill at all or a new special at all. She does come out with Attack Speed Bond, which meshes really well with her Dragon Rage. And so if you were to pull that off and be by your allies when an enemy would come and attack you in the enemy phase, and you would, you know, get both the weapon and the skill and get plus 10 to attack and speed, which is pretty cool. And for fodder, this is still only available at 5 stars, and so it's not... And most of the other attack and speed bonds are pretty much available on seasonal units only, and so at the very least, we get attack and speed bond, if not for the first time, maybe for the second or third time. I'm not sure of the list of other characters who do have this skill, but it is nice to have it at least in the permanent summoning pool. And then she comes out with Fortified Dragons, and while this is great to have, if you do run a lot of dragons and these emblem buffs are important to you, actually with Male Kana, you do get that at 4 stars, and with Heroic Grails, of course, you have more than enough of a supply. If you want to use those resources in that regard, you do have the option of Male Kana offering that up to you. It's also available on Original Ninian, but of course that's at 5 stars, and she is a 5-star exclusive unit anyway. And so Fortified Dragons is not probably the reason that you'd want to summon 4 female Corrin based on its availability with Male Kana. So let's move on to her base kit, or her builds with her base kit and her builds with a more of an investment, and see how well she does in the simulator. And once again, simulators are great for, I think, an overall picture based on the enemy units that we use that kind of represent the more of the meta or the most popular units that you would find, I think, both in Arena and with the new Aether raids as well. So it doesn't really reflect what you'd find in PvE content. And of course, it doesn't cover every situation. It doesn't cover what you use for your team building aspects as well. It's hard to predict every situation, but I think it's still fun to see what kind of a overall picture a unit brings to the table, both with their base kit and with their higher investment. If you had unlimited resources and wanted to invest further into a unit because you like them or you think they're really good, then it's also important to look at that. But, so let's look into it and see how well female Corrin does. So with her free-to-play kit, I gave her, her base kit, so all the skills that I just mentioned, gave her Quick Riposte in the B slot, and the new Attack Defense Bond in the seal. And I'll give my 2 cents on the Tempest Trial seals at the end, since, as a teaser, I will cover young Azura in this episode as well. But, so, the reason, and this comes from GamePress 2, with their optimal build, I believe, or one of the two optimal builds that they have there, that having Quick Riposte in the B slot, even though her female Corrin's speed is really high, you might think, well, why would you use Quick Riposte? But it really, it covers her against really fast units that have, 40, 45 speed or so, based on, original stats and buffs. So it covers her there in the enemy phase, just in case, but it also takes advantage of her ability to receive these bond skills, which is more viable in the enemy phase, like I mentioned before. And so, she has the option to attack in player phase and potentially get a double based on her really high speed, but she also has the option to be in the Quick Riposte enemy phase area, and I think that really adds to her versatility and makes her pretty good. So, given her that and the bond skill and the seal skill, she gets in the player phase 75% of the KOs, and in the enemy phase 79%. And of course, this is with all of the bond skills activated in addition to her weapon. So, with this build, she's pretty balanced, and I think on the upper end of what an average good unit would see, and it seems very reasonable as well, her being a dragon unit with inflated stats, that she would get such results. Now, a couple of comments on this build. You have to be in the right situation to apply all of this. You have to be by your ally. So if she's by herself and you're facing a ton of units, for example, like, you know, in Tempest Trials or something where you Khorne's the only survivor and moves on to the next map, she's the only one left, she won't have access to these buffs. Or any other situation where you might not be close to your allies, and for one reason or another, you would lose out there. And so if you were to take away all three of those buffs, you know, the bond, you know, quote-unquote buff that she gets with her Dragon Rage, plus her A-skill attack speed bond and the attack defensive bond in the seal spot, if you were to lose all those buffs and put her through the simulation again, she would drop to 7% in the player phase and 17% in the enemy phase without those buffs. And so it's really apparent how good these buffs are, but on the flip side, it's also really detrimental when she doesn't have those buffs. Now, you have to watch out for Brave Sword users and Brave units in general, like, you know, Reinhardt, Celica with Double Lion, Amity from Malincia, and so forth. But even units like Grima and the Hectors, both Green Axe Hector and Lance Hector, really did a number on Khorne, and it was surprising to see that she wasn't able to defeat some of these characters with her color advantage or being the same color. When we looked at her with a higher investment type of build, and once again looking at GamePress's recommendations for that, switching out her special for Blue Flame, putting DC on her, Distant Counter, keeping Quick Riposte, adding even attack wave or odd attack wave, it really depends on which one you have, and adding a quick and pulse seal for her sacred seal spot, brought her to somewhat of the same numbers. She did better in the enemy phase this time, or actually 1% better at 80% overall, but it dropped her player phase potential to 61%. But I do want to keep in mind that this is very consistent. She doesn't really, of course, her weapon relies on allies, and so you can lose some percentages there. But you don't have the double bond buffs that you're worrying about. You do have, of course, you do need to be in the right turn to get the attack wave buff. But having Distant Counter keeps it very consistent when you are going up against ranged units. And so what happened was, I thought it was a very interesting stat that she, against ranged units, got 80% of the KOs with Distant Counter. And if you were going with the more free-to-play build and had added all of the buffs that you get from her bonds, then you would get pretty much the same rating, 80%. And so she does just as well against ranged units with Distant Counter, and she will have the consistency to do so. And so that's, I think, the benefit of investing a little bit more with that skill with female Khorne. But and that goes across the board as well if you're going up against melee units. And of course, she does a little bit better anyway with her enemy phase with this build. And so in my opinion, it is it would be, if you were looking to invest heavily into female Khorne, it is worth going the extra mile and using a high investment build. But if you feel confident enough to be able to pull off those bond skills and be near to allies, and then you can go ahead and stick to the free-to-play build and potentially get just as much out of her as you would with a higher investment build. So once again, lots of versatility there. And I think that's pretty cool. So my rating of her would be a 4, maybe a 4.25 out of 5 for me. And this rating comes with a comparison made to Faye, which we already have in the game, who is available at 3 to 4 stars. And if you were to compare their stats both at plus 10, you know, maximizing their potential, while Faye has more resistance than female Khorne, Khorne does have a little bit more attack and defense, a little bit less HP, but she still has a tiny bit more to offer there if you're looking straight up stats. But overall, I don't see much of a difference in playstyle between these two units. The discrepancies in their stats don't account for a radical change in how you would approach using a green infantry dragon unit. I didn't compare her to female Khorne, but and of course, maybe that should be used as a comparison to see if there is any difference, since she is available as a 5-star unit. But of course, having Faye in the 3 to 4 star pool, is the likelihood of just having a green dragon is going to be her, and it's I feel like it's more worth using your investments, you know, your time and your feathers to build Faye up rather than going straight for female Khorne, unless you really like female Khorne. So I think that she, if you were to look at the tier lists, I think she would fall in tier 3 with Faye, and still a very good unit in general. She doesn't really bring too much to the fodder table besides a rally attack speed plus, which may, you know, maybe really good if you're looking for that extra boost to your arena score. However, to the grander scheme of things, for PvE content and just for usability in arena or otherwise, you know, movement skills like reposition still do much better and are more useful. And if you don't really care about scoring, then it's not going to make much of a big deal. And so, yeah, so I think, you know, a 4 out of 5 is fair enough, and a tier 3 is good. She is a great unit, and if you do decide to build her, I think she will serve you pretty well in whatever you use her for. Let's move on to male Khorne. So his stats at level 40 neutral IVs is 42 HP, 35 attack and 35 speed, 31 defense, and 24 resistance, with no super banes and a super boon in resistance, bringing his BST to 167. So once again, unfortunately, even with that super boon in resistance, it wouldn't get you to the 170 bin. So the best IVs, if you're looking to maximize your potential with male Khorne, would probably be in either attack, speed, or defense. And in my opinion, I think it would be best to do either attack or defense. And minus resistance is probably fair enough to get. Keeping that HP high can serve you well, and probably a little bit better if it is in resistance. But once again, he doesn't have any super banes, and so that is pretty nice. Once again, he comes with Dragon Range and Rage as a weapon, same thing as female Khorne, and we've already discussed that. And it's still a very good weapon, and I highly recommend keeping that on him. And he comes with Dragon Fang, which is available since the beginning of the game, and so nothing new to talk about there. And I think it does, it works pretty well with his kit. I think that with his higher attack, and if you look to kind of boost that up, he gets more damage out of that, and so it's pretty good. And with the Dragon Rage having a reduced cooldown from that, it's easier to activate. Attack and defense bond, which is also what you get with the Tempest Trials seal, of course. So it's very interesting that you could use attack and defense again on him and get plus 10 to both of those stats. As far as for fodder, it is easier to get than attack and speed bond. It is available on Fjorm and Owain in the permanent pool, Fjorm being a legendary hero that I guess is permanent when she does come around in the legendary banners. But yeah, so it's pretty fair to get. And also Hone Dragons, only Myr has it, which, and she is in the permanent pool, so we get another unit with Hone Dragons. It's probably it's important to have, and Hone Dragons is a very good skill. But the new skill that he comes with is null follow-up, and I think that's the main topic of discussion with Malekorn, and probably from this banner as well. So let me read you the text, and we'll go into how it works. It says, disables foes' skills that guarantee foes' follow-up attack, and foes' skills that prevent units' follow-up attack. So the big question is, what does it disable, and what doesn't it disable? So let me read you a list of what it does disable. And this is based on reading the text in these skills, and we'll talk about that after I read the list. So Bold Fighter, Vengeful Fighter, Wary Fighter, Follow-Up Ring from Arden, Quick Riposte, all of the Breaker skills, Brash Assault, Binding Shield from Legendary Marth, and it also disables these types of skills from weapons as well. So Sigmund, Flame Sigmund as well, Garm, so sorry, Ephraim, you don't, this new skill is anti-Ephraim, Armads and Thunder Armads from Hector, Sulcati, the Brash Assault part of it, Hoarfrost Knife, Brynhildr, Maltet, also from Hector, Great Flame and Spirit Breath from the original and Halloween Myrrh, respectively, Binding Blade Refined because of the Quick Riposte part of it, and Assassin's Bow, which can be upgraded to Guard Bow, and a lot of people don't use Assassin's Bow anymore, but it's basically a dagger breaker built into the bow, so that's why it doesn't work. So what doesn't it disable? It won't disable Desperation or Forseti, because they change the attack order. Even though the text, I was reading the text earlier, and it's, you know, it has follow-up in the text, in the description of these skills or weapon, but it, in practicality, it just changes the order of when these attacks occur. So it's not necessarily preventing the quote-unquote guaranteed follow-up attack. It's based on speed rather than being granted to you from the skill. So Desperation and Forseti don't work, are not nulled. The Desperation part of Sulcati for the same reason, and Brave Weapons as well. So Dire Thunder wouldn't be disabled. Brave weapons like Amity, Cherche's Axe, and all the other Brave weapons, they basically read in their text that allows you to attack twice, and so it has nothing said about a follow-up attack or a guarantee of that. It's a completely different situation. And so after reading that list, it's important to note, and as we see, that anything that adds a guaranteed follow-up attack when one wouldn't have existed based on speed or based on the brave type of effect, anything else that hasn't been, that isn't under those two descriptions will be nullified with null follow-up. So that is important to note, and hopefully this list is comprehensive. I hope I didn't leave anything out, but I hope that it at least portrays the idea of how it works. So, very, very important skill, and a lot of those skills that I mentioned are very top tier. I mean, a lot of people who are using armor units are going to use Bold Fighter, Vengeful Fighter. If you, you know, upgraded those weapons come with units that are very high class. You've got Hector, you've got Brave Ephraim as well, and Myrrh. And so it affects a lot of units that use really important skills in the game right now that define the meta. So the question is it worth it? And I was asking this question because when I looked onto GamePress, I don't know if they will update this soon or not, if it will make a difference or not, but in their recommended builds, it didn't mention null follow-up at all. And in contrast with that, you know, reading on Reddit and reading people's opinions on this and watching it being used, it seems like it would make a big difference in the meta right now, especially if you go up against a lot of these units. First of all, if you find that you are going up against a lot of Hectors, a lot of Ephraims, or just a lot of armor units in general with the fighter skills, and to a lesser degree, if you run into a lot of Myrrhs, on flying or dragon teams, or people with breaker skills in general that are kind of the free-to-play version of these fighter skills that are a little bit easier to obtain. There was kind of a conflict there, and I, in my opinion, I think it is a really good skill. I think that it will be useful if you do go up against a lot of these higher tier units, but only if you have a unit that can go toe-to-toe with them if they didn't have that guaranteed follow-up attack. So they have to have high, first of all, a unit that I think would fit this this null follow-up, or that would use this null follow-up really well. It does fit Adrift Corrin very well. I think he has the three things that I'm looking for with a unit that would use the skill well, which is high attack, high defense, and high speed. And I say those because high attack, if you are preventing these follow-up attacks from these armor units, you want to have high attack to be able to overcome their defense and potentially use your high speed as well to overwhelm them and KO them in one bout. And high defense, because it doesn't completely prevent them from attacking you. It only means they will attack you once. And so a lot of these units are very strong. You look at Grima, you look at Hector, they have plenty of attack. And so your unit that uses null follow-up should be pretty tanky as well. And so I think those... And the first unit that I could think of besides Adrift Corrin would be Black Knight. He has really good attack, really good speed, and really good defense. And I think if you happen to get Adrift Corrin and wanted to, or a second copy wanted to fodder him off, or just wanted to fodder him in general for this skill, and you know, everyone pretty much has access now to Black Knight, who plays very well, much like Zelgius, right? And he is the red armor unit to go for. That is a sword unit. And so I think Black Knight kind of fits the bill pretty well. Once again, Adrift Corrin. I think Elwood as well, the Love Abounds Elwood, has really good mixed defenses, and so he's got that going for him, as well as really high attack and pretty good speed as well, potentially enough to overcome some of these units that are a little bit slower, but really tanky and powerful. Legendary Ike, Winter Robin are really good examples as well. When you look at their stats, they have like really high attack speed and defense, somewhat lower resistance, and somewhat of a lower HP threshold as well. And so it's... if you're looking for a unit to put this on, if they kind of fit that kind of category of a stat spread, then that's probably the best unit to go on. But of course, you do you. You build whatever unit that you think would fit this best. That's just my opinion on who I think would use it best. So speaking of builds and matchups, let's talk about Male Corrin and how well he does, especially with this null follow-up in the meta. So with a free-to-play build, keeping the null follow-up on him and adding a close defense seal in the seal spot, he does really well. He gets 88% in the enemy phase and 78% in the player phase. So he only lost to, and I looked at specifically the armor units, and he only lost to seven of them. And of course, a lot of them had a special build where they were giving a brave weapon, so a brave lance or a brave sword or something like that. If they used magic like Love Abounds Lin or Halloween Henry, and targeting his really on the low side resistance, you know, it makes sense that he would lose to them. But he and Legendary Tiki and Grima, there's one version of each that was able to overcome Male Corrin, but of course he was able to take out other versions of Grima and do pretty well. So if you were to, and I did a little experiment too, and this is with Corrin at plus 10 to match the enemy list at plus 10 as well. And so if I were to remove that and make him unmerged at all, at no merges,
He still did pretty well against the armor units. He lost to an additional 10 units, a lot more of the Grima's versions that were in the list were able to beat him, but of course he does have that color disadvantage, and yeah, but he still did pretty well. It was still about, you know, upwards of 70-80% or so of how well he did against armor units. And so I think the null follow-up is very effective against the units that would typify, I think, in IS's mind of who of how this skill would counter certain units. I think they had definitely had armor units with fighter skills in mind, and it did the job. I think Mail Corn did come in with the stats necessary to go toe-to-toe with them, and in practicality, I think it is possible to use him against these units and use him in the enemy phase if necessary, or in the player phase as well, and with some buffs and debuffs based on your teammates and whatnot, I think he can hold his own. Now, if you're to look at a higher investment build, given him Blue Flame, Fierce Breath, or Steady Breath, Wrath, instead of a follow-up, null follow-up, Attack Wave, and Close Defense as the seal, he would get 80% in the enemy phase without Blue Flame and Dragon Rage, and he would go right back up to 88% with them enabled. And in the player phase, he would go at 65% without those buffs from Blue Flame and Dragon Rage, and then up to 78% with those buffs. And so he matched exactly, number for number, how he did in the enemy phase and player phase with this non-follow-up build compared to his original base kit with null follow-up. And so I thought that was very interesting that he was able to compete pretty well against them. And my reasoning for that is a lot of the units that are on this list, if whether they come naturally with Bold Fighter or Vengeful Fighter, or they have that inherited, a lot of the units, like a lot of the armor units that you would get a little bit more easily in the game, like Gwendolyn, Effie, Draug, you know, they are built to their maximum potential in this hard list, and they would have those fighter skills. And so it makes sense that Mail Corn would perform a little bit better in the simulator because a lot of these units had these fighter skills, which he was able to nullify. Now, in practicality, I wonder, with the dual skills coming out, if you were to look at just Arena, with dual skills coming out, how many more mages or you know, dragons in that matter would come out and would face Mail Corn. And I think that, yeah, maybe his performance would decrease a little bit because he doesn't have that advantage with null follow-up. And so I think that's why they consider the Wrath build or something similar to that other than null follow-up is more preferred by Game Press, because you would most likely help you out in all situations. It wouldn't require you to just be up against someone that would have a skill for you to nullify. And so once again, higher investment equals more consistency. But still, I am really pleased with the results that I saw of how well his base kit did against those units that had skills to nullify. And so my rating of him is going to be a 4.5 out of 5. I think that this skill is game-changing, and if we continue to see a lot of units in with these kind of skills, especially as we kind of tease out this strategy and the units that you would like to use in Aether Raid, then, because we already know how important armor units are in Arena, so if that kind of trend continues, then Mail Corn himself, in addition to him being fodder, would increase as well. And so for that reason, I give him a 4.5 out of 5. I really like how well he did in the arena, in the simulator, somewhat similar to Female Corn. And once again, you have to make the comparison to their free-to-play, quote-unquote, counterparts. So you have Naui and you have Mael Qana. Now, Naui boasts better defenses at the cost of speed. So she's more min-maxed to pull out the enemy phase than Mael Qana or Mael Qoran is. And Mael Qana, though, has a very similar stat spread to Mael Qoran, actually. Very good attack, defense, and speed, and more resistance as well. But with, of course, heroic grails, he might be easier to obtain, just based on how often we do get these resources in the game from now and now forward. So rather than spending orbs, you would spend your grail points for a similar unit. Of course, Naui performs just as well, and in the past has been a top-tier unit, and is still very good. She's in Tier 3 right now, and that's where I would put Mael Qoran. I feel like his, even though he has a really good skill going for him, as far as his playability, he matches Naui and Mael Qana, who both of are easier to get, whether it's with orbs with Naui or with heroic grails as well. And so it's kind of a tough situation for Mael Qoran. I think that unless you really like Mael Qoran himself, then looking at it from an objective point of view, there are easier ways to get the same type of character, type of blue infantry dragon on your team. And so I would rather venture down that path and use my resources more wisely to build up a Naui or a Mael Qana rather than spending a lot of orbs for Qoran, if you were, once again, looking at this objectively. So, so those are my thoughts on Mael Qoran. Let's move on to Mikoto. So, first of all, big fan of the voice actress who plays Mikoto, Marisha Ray. As I've mentioned in the past, I have been getting into Dungeons & Dragons recently, and she is on a podcast that I really like, Critical Role, and a lot of fun to listen to them on that show. And a lot of them, actually, you have Matt Mercer, of course, who does a lot of characters like Krom and Shigure in Fire Emblem, and you have other characters, other voice actors in that show that play characters in Fire Emblem, so it's really cool to see that. Another voice actress being a part of the Fire Emblem world. So, but anyway, so her stat spread is 38 HP, 35 attack, 32 speed, 20 defense, and 26 resistance, with a super bane in HP and a super boon in resistance. And she comes out with a BST of 151, and according to GamePress, her best IVs are attack, speed, resistance, and her bane that you're looking for is defense, of course. And I think, in my opinion, either speed or attack is probably best. Now, when you're looking at her and comparing her stats to other staff users, she is very similar offensively to Maribel, to kind of give you a picture of how well she would do. Of course, she does have infantry bonuses, like if you were to able infantry pulse or rush and things like that, tactic boosts as well. She has those available for her. And she also has more HP and defense than Maribel does. But as far as her offenses, which I think is more important in this case, and we'll talk about why, she does compare very well to Maribel. So let's talk about her weapon. And I think this is a very interesting weapon that we've received into the game. It's Flash. And let me read you the text. After combat, if unit attacked, inflict status on target and foes within two spaces of target, preventing counterattacks through their next actions. So does that sound familiar? And it should, because if you either have or have heard of Bridal Lin, that is exactly what Candlelight reads out to be. It's the same weapon as Candlelight. But, of course, Bridal Lin is a seasonal unit, and now Flash is the more permanent summoning pool counterpart to that weapon. And so I think that's really cool. So the next question is, how well is this weapon compared to, or how good is it compared to the other inheritable top-tier staff unit, staff user weapons, which I believe in Greps' opinion as well, would be Gravity and Pain. Those are the most useful staves to use or inherit onto units that you might use in Arena. And of course, I will allude to my future colorless character clash. It's going to be a really good episode, and I do dive into my thoughts on how to build a healer as well. So a lot more to come with that. But I think that this staff is very useful because if you give it the Dazzling Refine, then that which prevents any counterattacks during combat, you're going to inflict that status of no counterattacking afterwards, and it will just leave the enemy team completely defenseless, and they can't retaliate at all, leaving your team, if you were to attack with like Makoto first and then have your other three come up and pretty much clean up. Very useful. I think it's very practical, and I feel like it's probably the best weapon to inherit onto a healer for the arena, as well as for PvE content, even more so than Pain and Gravity. I think while Gravity really helps, preventing counterattacks as far as on the enemy phase when they would potentially come up and try to attack you, or Pain, dealing out that extra damage to soften up the foes for your team to come out and attack. I feel like you can accomplish that to some degree with Savage Blow in the C and Seal spot with a unit that is using Flash. And so I think you're getting the most of what these staves have to offer, all compiled into one with Flash. And so I believe that this is now the staff to use that is inheritable. Of course, we're not talking about Brave Veronica's staff or otherwise. They do serve their purpose, and of course Brave Veronica is in a whole nother class of her own compared to the other staff users. But I feel like if you're looking to look for a building up a staff unit, I think Flash is an amazing weapon for Arena and PvE as well. So Makoto also comes with Martyr Plus and Miracle, which we already have in the game, Brazen Attack Resistance, and this is a very interesting skill that they put on her because, yeah, while it does increase her attack and resistance, which she does boast somewhat of a min-maxed a stat spread to, I feel like you don't want to use her, Makoto, in combat most of the time. I think with Flash, you are going in there and hopefully, preventing counterattacks in the future. And you're probably, if you're going to use her, refine her weapon to the Dazzling effect. Now, yeah, it would be, if you were to use her in the strictly offensive capacity, then yeah, I think Brazen Attack Resistance makes sense. And if you were to use Wrathful Staff instead of Dazzling, then yeah, you would get that benefit from that. But I feel like most people are not going to use Makoto in that way, just even if they're a higher investment type of player. I think Makoto just serves better and works better as a support unit, and so it's kind of an odd skill to have on Makoto, in addition to the fact that we have Brazen Attack Resistance as a seal already. So, but she does come with Infantry Rush as well, which was previously available on Summer Noir, and as a refresher, the skill basically says if you're next to a unit, it gives them the effect at the beginning of the turn. If your attack is higher than your opponent's attack, it gives you the Heavy Blade effect, the reduction in cooldown charge. So I feel like this skill, though, and I think it's been mentioned before, that it's just kind of hard to pull that off all the time. You have to be by units, first of all, that have really high attack. And, okay, first you have to be by the unit in the first place. Second, you have to be by a unit that has high attack and would be able to take advantage of that. And third, a lot of the units that you're going to face, I feel like, have really high attack to begin with and would have teammate buffs added to them. And so it's really unpredictable to pull off those buffs. And so I feel like the skills... usefulness has kind of decreased, and I think Heavy Blade, Flashing Blade, as a seal or even as an A-slot skill, serve a little bit better for consistency. So, yeah, not the best fodder there. I think if you were to look at Makoto as fodder, it would definitely be for her flash weapon. So not really anything to see or of note in the simulator that I wanted to dive into. I didn't really look at her combative potential. I looked at, you know, more of her supportive potential, because I think that is more important. That's my opinion. I think she is a better unit for support. And I think you could always, like I mentioned before, keep Flash, give it a Dazzling Refine, and use Savage Blow in the C slot and the Seal spot to be able to deal some extra damage out, soften up that team, that enemy team, and prevent them from counterattacking, so you can go ahead and clean up with the rest of your team. I think I would switch out Rehabilitate and Restore for her Martyr skill. I think those are better healing assist skills in general, and my reasons are going to be in that character clash. And I would switch Miracle out for Kindle Fire Bomb to give more attack to your all three allies, actually, or however many allies you have on the board. This works better, and I think Miracle is better if you were to use her in more of a in combat rather than support, and so I would switch that over to her in that regard. If you're looking to invest a little bit more into Makoto, then you can try a Wrathful Staff as well, just to get out some extra damage and potentially use her as a more combat-oriented type of unit. You could also try Attack Speed Solo or Attack Speed Bond to increase her offensive capabilities there. A attack or a speed plus 3 skill in the seal spot works pretty well as well. And you could always, if you wanted to, inherit Windfire Balm, which gives the attack and speed boost after you heal, and it comes from Brave Veronica, so that would work as well. So my rating of Makoto is 4.5 out of 5. I think with her similar stat spread to Maribel, offensively she has the potential to work in that regard and to actually do some damage. However, even with that potential, I still feel like the cavalry units like Brave Veronica, Maribel, Elise do a much better job at being more combative because they do have access to emblem buffs. And it's a little bit harder to do that with Makoto. On the flip side, she does have access to colorless duel. And so she could be, potentially, if you really like this character and you wanted to invest in her, she could be useful in arena scoring as well if you inherited that skill, that dual skill from Loki. How she stats for the tier list as well, I would put her in tier 2, right alongside Maribel, Mia, and Elise, based on her offensive stat spread as well as her weapon. I think that just by herself, she can serve a very good supportive role with how she is built. And so, yeah, I think she is a great unit. And looking into her further, I think that if you did happen to pull a copy of her, you shouldn't feel bad. And I think you could find a lot of use for her, not only in arena, but in PvE content as well. I think that she could be another option in addition to Brave Veronica as your healer of choice when you approach these harder maps in PvE content. All right, let's move on to Camilla. So she's a red tome flyer, and she comes with 36 HP, 37 attack, 30 speed, 17 defense, and 30 resistance, boasting one of the highest attacks in the game. She comes with a super bane of speed and defense, and a super boon of HP with a BST of 150. So if you did get that super boon in HP, that would drop her a bin. But of course, she does have access to red flyer infantry duel. Red dual flyer, that A skill, and so she could have that going for her for arena scoring. And looking at her, I compare her to like a flying version of Sonaki or Micaiah, just really high attack, or Lilina as well, just really high attack, low speed, really high resistance. Not low speed, it's pretty middling, and it's salvageable as well, but low defense. So, very interesting stat spread that she comes with. And her weapon, Book of Dreams, is very unique as well. So it grants her attack plus 3, bringing her up to a 40 neutral attack. And if a unit is adjacent to an ally and inflicts the attack speed, defense, resistance, minus 4 debuff on foe during combat. So it's essentially like a negative Fury 4 enlisted onto the foe without the damage penalty, of course. But you do have to be by an ally to use that. And so I think it works really well with bond skills, which is kind of a theme with this banner. And it also works well with Camilla because she does have flyer buffs as well. So on one hand, she is debuffing someone else, a foe, by 4 if she is by a unit, and she could potentially be getting either emblem buffs for plus 6 or, you know, a bond skill for plus 5. So essentially a plus 9 or plus 10 stat difference buff, I guess, for Camilla. So that really creates a lot of possibilities for her as a unit. So she has drawback and attack resistance bond, as well as attack resistance link, which is a new skill, and it works pretty well. It meshes with her drawback and her other bond skill as well, increasing her attack and resistance, making her not only stronger with her really high attack, but also a little bit more capable to deal with ranged mage or magical users. And she also comes with gold flyers, but that's on Pala at 4 stars, so nothing to see there. So looking at her builds, her free-to-play kit is her base kit plus Glimmer and attack and defense bond seal from this new Tempest Trial. So once again, very similar to Female Khorne, trying to use a lot of these situational buffs by being next to allies and in her case, using this link skill. So if you had everything activated, including her weapon, including her bonds, and the link skill if you were to use reposition by from someone else or something like that, that would bring her base attack up to 61. And she would get 76% of the KOs in the player phase and bump that up to 81% with honed flyer buffs. Now, on the flip side, without any buffs, that drops her down to 38% total KOs. And she is weaker to archers, and ranged blue units are a little bit tough to beat, especially those DC units like Harden and Effie with Distant Counter, Brave Hector as well. But yeah, so that's pretty fair and not too bad for a free-to-play build. If you were to invest in her a little bit more, and what's recommended by GamePress, of course, is to take away her Book of Dreams, wake her up, and actually use Rowerblade, Blade Tome. And if you were to give her Deathblow 4, Chill Resistance, and Attack plus 3 Seal, and add on the Flyer buffs, that brings her up to 88%. And if you were to add some more buffs, of course, that just brings her up into the 90%, and so on and so forth. That almost exponential growth from Rowerblade is just amazing. And that's in the player phase, of course, as well. It is definitely more consistent to use because I feel like just getting buffs from your teammates is a little bit easier to accomplish rather than using a link skill and using a movement type of assist skill. While they are used constantly, consistently in arena, it's sometimes hard to position your unit just right to like use the link skill and then have Camilla attack and be by a unit to take advantage of those bond skills. And so while those stats are very good, they're not too bad, I would lean more towards the no buffs type of outcome, closer to like 38% rather than the 76 or 81% that you would see with Camilla. And of course, Rowerblade, yeah, it's a great weapon and definitely helps you with and helps her with her really high attack to just explode and try for that one round KO on you. It's very similar to Sanaki and Lilina. Now, there's also the option to run an AoE special to potentially get a one round KO on the unit that you're attacking, in addition to decreasing the HP of any other foes around them. I think it's a little bit easier to pull that off with Lilina, based on her base weapon with just Death Blow and adding another Death Blow onto it with her A slot, and just having the options of like infantry pulls, especially how that is a little bit more available now, thanks to Marissa in the Heroic Grail category. I think it's a little bit easier to do that, and so it's probably best to stick with something like Glitter for Camilla. Avoid the AoE, even though it might still work out. You'd have to use Quicken Pulse and some other methods of decreasing that cooldown for her. So I'm not saying it's impossible. It is possible, but I think it's just easier with an infantry unit to pull that off. I also looked at a close counter build with Camilla, since she, even though she has really poor defenses, I feel like with her middling speed and the potential with the debuffs, maybe she could pull that off. And it was a pretty fair simulation result with close counter, glimmer, quick riposte, resistance ploy, and close defense as a seal. She did 62% without the ploy and 70% with the ploy activated. So that wasn't too bad. That's pretty average. I think getting to about that 3/4 of KOs in the simulator kind of tells me overall she is a good unit. I think anything less than that is like she's not a good unit. So yeah, so there are options as well to kind of improve on that build if you wanted to give her like a defensive wave skill, using emblem buffs, of course, like Fortify and Goad could help her out there as well. Threaten skills, Smoke, and Brazen as well could potentially help her out there as well. But still, I think it's viable, and I think that leads me to her her rating. I know a lot of people were disappointed with this banner, mostly because of Camilla having a fifth alt, but as a unit and coming at it objectively, she does pretty well. I give her a 4.5 out of 5. And I think that's because she does have the option to run Rower Blade, and with her really high attack, she is able to pull off a lot of one-round KOs, and it's very unpredictable as well with movement. Her being a flyer and using something like aerobatics or guidance as well just adds to the mix. And she can also run an enemy phase type of build as well, and so she has both kinds of builds going for her, and I'm a fan of that. She's also, once again, a candidate for the red flyer dual skill. So you could use her on an arena team and score pretty high and add like 20 points to her BST. So I would feel comfortable putting her tier 2, but it's either tier 2 or tier 3 for me is my prediction of where she would fall on GamePress's ladder. And to finish off this recording, I'm going to talk about Young Azura. I know she's not on the banner, but she is a free Tempest Trial reward, both at 4 stars and 5 stars, so you get 2 copies of her if you get enough points. And she is a green infantry dancer, and the first free unit of that kind for us to have gotten. So rest in peace, Inigo. So she comes with a stat spread of 36 HP, 33 attack, 29 speed, 17 defense, and 25 resistance. And of note, potentially in the future, I am fairly certain that they will do this, but she will have access to Heroic Grail status and to be able to be plus 10 in the future, in addition to having access to green dual infantry. And with that, I mean, looking at her attack spread as well, her attack stat, she has 33 attack, which is an improvement from Inigo's 28, and it's the same as Deidre and Sonya if you want a comparison for her attack. So she's not, I don't think she's too bad of a unit as far as combat is concerned. Of course, she is a dancer, and it's probably better and easier to build her in a more supportive role. Now, in that, but speaking of her combat, she does come with Book of Shadow, and one that is a preferred weapon. So that just adds to her potential for being a candidate for green dual infantry. but it's pretty much the same effect as Camilla's, giving that negative Fury 4 effect to your foe if you're next to an ally, but it grants her plus 3 speed, bringing her base speed to 32 at unmerged neutral IVs. So, yeah, like I don't think she's going to see a lot of combat. You could build her up in that regard. I think if you were to give her something like, you know, Triangle Adept or a Breaker skill or something like that, she does have the option to run a more combative type of build. But of course, I think she's more built for support. She comes with Sing, of course, giving that extra turn to an ally. She comes with Speed Res Bond, which improves her speed to 37 if you're next to someone. And that, of course, is in addition to Book of Shadows, if you're next to that ally, improving her speed to 41. In addition to helping out her resistance. But Torrent Dance is a new skill that she comes at. It's a B-slot skill that grants resistance plus 5 to someone that you danced for or sung for. And I think it's only good for, like, increasing a unit that has Iceberg or Glacies to increase their damage output, or helping with ploys, or if there are a lot more mages and magical units running around in arena, then yeah, that this plus 5 would be helpful to your teammates. But I think that in all, there are better dances, better buffs that you can get, specifically with speed and attack. And it's also of note that she is the first unit, you know, after talking about her skills, she's the first unit that has not come out with a skill, besides like Mask Marth, who doesn't come out with any fodder, but she doesn't have any skills that are available at 4 stars. Because Sing is that skill that is not inheritable. So once again, focus on building her with support. Of course, with Wings of Mercy is probably a common and best option for her B slot. But you could also try Torrent Dance, or if you wanted to use that resistance from her base kit, or you could use Blazing Dance from Performing Arts Olivia if you do have her available and you want to invest in her a little bit more. After you dance, that would add plus 4 attack to the ally that you danced for or sung for. You could also try adding the Gale Dance seal from the latest Tempest Trials. And that is very useful there. I think she would use this very well to add the speed after you dance for someone. Now, I don't think she has enough resistance to really use a ploy, in my opinion. Of course, you could try to build up that with some other skills, but I feel like if you were to use her with a chill skill in the B slot, I think that would be a great higher investment type of build for her. You could use, of course, an infantry dual skill in the A slot, like I mentioned before, Triangled Adept or a Breaker skill to make her a little bit better in combat. So my rating for her is a 4.5 out of 5. I think, in addition to her being a good dancer, I think she does have potential to hold her own against magical units. And potentially, like if you were to give her Windsweep or something like that, she could potentially get some good damage output based on her weapon. And say you gave her a bond skill in the attack defense bond in the seal spot. She does have that potential as well, so I think she has a lot going for her. Great free dancer for everyone to have at least one copy of, and I would expect her to be at tier 3, right where Performing Arts Azura is in the Axe category. I think that, she would fit very well there, and she is one above Inigo, who is in tier 4 currently, so I think that is where she's going to be. And just as a final note for Tempest Trial rewards for the seals that we are getting, I think the worst seal is the Water Boost. One, because of the HP requirement that is required, it's very fluid. If you get what I mean, when you are in combat, because you're constantly losing HP based on combat, based on skills as well. Like if you're using Fury or something like that, it's hard to consistently have more HP than your opponent. Plus, the boost of resistance is probably not in everyone's favor. I think it's really niche and not as helpful as, say, an attack or a defense boon or even speed. After that, then the Gale Dance is the next best seal. Great to put it on your dancers and add a little bit of speed. But of course, the Attack Defense Bond being the best seal out of this. I think, in addition to Brazen that we got not too long ago, I think Attack Defense Bond is a great seal and we'll probably see more of as people use it more and more often. So let me finish off this episode with my final thoughts on summoning. I don't think this is the highest priority type of banner to summon on. I think no one is going to be really in tier one. No one's really going to be using a lot of these units in the arena, other than as bonus units. If people really like these characters, then we would see them, you know, heavily merged and all. But I think that there's nothing really groundbreaking based on this banner. And I do include Null follow-up as that. I think that is probably the most groundbreaking development with this banner, and one of the only reasons you would summon on it, I think. I think we should wait and see what the next banner holds. We did get the calendar announcement and know that new units are coming in a week or so. So we should wait and see what those units are and what kind of skills they come with before spending all of your orbs on this banner. I think it's prudent to wait. For summoning, if you do decide to summon on this banner, and if you want my opinion on where I would place them, I think it really depends on why you would summon on this banner. So if you're looking for arena scoring, I think female Khorne and male Khorne are very good. But they're at the bottom of my list because it wouldn't be worth adding a dual infantry skill onto, you know, say, female Khorne. You have Mikoto and you have Camilla, who I would rank higher as far as you know, arena scoring is concerned, because we do have access to those dual infantry skills. And now that there isn't a banner though to summon for those skills, maybe you've either saved one up or you've been pity broken by one, and so it'd be a lot more helpful to merge up and try to build up Mikoto or Camilla for that purpose. And of course, another reason, if you have Faye or Naoi, the 3-4 star options for dragons in blue and color and blue and green colors, those are a lot easier to build up than female or male Khorne from this banner. So it's just easier to do that, and it's cheaper as well. Now for just arena performance, PvE performance as well, just straight up performance, not regarding scoring at all, I would rate Mikoto at the bottom, followed by female Khorne, male Khorne, and Camilla all at an equal level. And I say that based on what I saw from the simulator. Now, and of course, Mikoto is more of a supportive unit, and so she does serve a really important role there. But female Khorne, male Khorne, and Camilla, I think, you know, with their base kits, they do tend to want to be by someone else and try to get a buff from an ally based on that. And they do really well. If anything, I think Camilla does worse than the Khorne's, because she would most likely have to be an enemy phase unit. And if you were to build her with like close counter or something like that, then she doesn't rank as highly as the Khorne's would. So I guess I should revise that. So Mikoto at the bottom, followed by Camilla, followed by female Khorne and male Khorne. But then again, you have Camilla's option to use Rowerblade and get those one-shot KOs in. And so I think that's why I kind of rank them pretty close to each other. Definitely, though, you know, the Khorne's have a lot more consistency in both phases, and so they do have that going for them. So, yeah. And if you have, like, Brave Veronica, I think she is better than Mikoto for offense as well as for viability in other ways, like in support. She just has a lot of skills and options going for her. So there's that. And finally, if you're looking for fodder, I would put Camilla at the bottom. She doesn't really come with much new to add. She comes with the attack resistance link, and it's probably not as useful as a skill compared to, next would be female Corrin. She does come with the attack speed rally plus skill, which is very useful if you're looking for scoring purposes. And it's a really good rally skill in general, but, I mean, you're probably looking for passive skills more so than your assist skills, unless you're really vying for a really high score. So I don't think it's necessarily worth summoning for. Makoto would be next, in my opinion, because she does come with Flash, and I think if you are building up a healer and using a healer actively in whatever mode, especially in Arena, then I think Flash might be worth trying for and using on your healer. I think it's a really good staff. And then, of course, Male Corrin. I think the Null follow-up is just an amazing skill that has its use, of course, in the current state of game. If you do run up against a lot of armor units that have these fighter skills, or even just any unit that might have a guaranteed follow-up type of skill, the Null follow-up is going to be a great option for whatever unit that you might choose to put it on. And once again, I think someone that has high attack, defense, and speed would probably use this best. And if it's not Adult Corrin or Adrift Corrin, then it's probably someone else that you might have built up even more. So I think it's a great skill. And I think if you were to look, I mean, I'm not going to drop everything and try to summon in for it, summon for that skill now. I think if, I don't know if it's quite worth that, you know, spending orbs for, in my perspective, being, you know, free to play. If you were looking for, you know, higher investment and having that a little bit of an edge in Arena, then it might be worth summoning for and sticking on maybe one unit, maybe two. But other than that, it's still a great option for fodder. And if you're looking for high investment skills, then this might be right for you. So that is it. That is my analysis on this banner, Adrift banner. If you, you know, if hopefully after this recording you might hear from Greps, but if not, then thank you for listening. And if you want to reach out to me or Greps, you can reach me at phaology@gmail.com or Greps at grepsteinfeh@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And you can also comment on our subreddit at r/phaology. And we hope that you schedule an appointment with us soon. And stay tuned for more exciting content on the show. Thanks again.